What if I told you that one of the oldest and most influential books ever written holds the secrets to wealth? And not just spiritual riches, but actual, tangible, wealth-building principles. Would you want to know what they are? Now, I've read hundreds of books on personal development, on business, on finance, on investing, and I've found that almost every principle taught came from a single book. And that book is the Bible. Now, before you're quick to dismiss this, because, you know, you think the scriptures are disconnected from modern financial strategies, I want to show you exactly how the Bible is actually bursting with practical advice on building wealth, on managing resources, and securing your family's future. Now, one thing that I've learned is one of the greatest filters in the world is time. Things that last for decades, they're probably good. They're probably true. Think about best-selling books. But when they last for hundreds of years, what about when they last for thousands of years? There's got to be something to them. So today, I'm going to break down 12 of the most powerful and timeless wealth building strategies that have been taught over and over for thousands of years, and they come straight from the Bible. You're going to learn how these timeless truths can help you manage your finances wisely, how you can grow your investments, and even set a foundation for generations to come. Now, if you're new to the channel, my name is Mark Moss. I've been teaching investing principles. I've been coaching thousands of investors now for about 9 years. I'm a partner at a leading tech VC hedge fund, and I've also learned a lot of these principles directly from the Bible that I've learned most of my life and have applied. They've worked pretty well for me. I'm really happy to share them with you right now. So let's go. All right, let's just jump right in. And I just want to say real quick, I learned something early on in my career, and that is that principles are few, but methods are many. What this means is that there's only a few core principles in life for success. There's a million ways to apply the principles, and that's what all the books are written about. That's what you hear all the people talk about, different ways to apply, different methods to apply the principles, but there's only a few core timeless principles. And of course, Jordan Peterson said that the Bible isn't just true. It is. It's not just true. It's truth itself. And the reason why he says that is because it's the oldest book. Everything has come from it. And so the principles here have been taught over and over, different methods, different applications, but these are the timeless principles. A lot of you might just go, well, doesn't the Bible say that money is the root of all evil? Well, it actually doesn't say that. As a matter of fact, it says in 1 Timothy that the love of money is the root of all evil. It also says in Jude 3 that in the last days, there will be difficult times for people who love only themselves and their money. So it's not money. It's the love of money. Now, another thing I want to say before we jump into these 12 rules is that most people think of money as a tool, and it is. Now, unfortunately, the world has sort of twisted this to where they want to use people and they love money. The reality is that we should love other people and use money to better other people's lives. But the fiat monetary system has distorted what we know as money. And the reason why is that while it's supposed to be a tool that could be used for good or bad, the fiat monetary system is a system built on theft, on lies, and deceit. And anything that builds or touches becomes inherently evil. So that's a whole other reason why I'm a sound money advocate. It's why I talk about Bitcoin. But let's just go ahead and just jump right in. I want to talk first about work. So let's start with work. Work being a virtue. Now, in the Bible, work is presented not as a post-fall curse, but actually as a foundational aspect of human purpose and dignity. It was given to us as a way to feel this sense of self-worth, and it was instituted long before sin ever entered the world. As a matter of fact, in the beginning of the Bible, in Genesis 2:15, it says that the Lord God took man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and take care of it. So all these environmentalists who think we're supposed to leave the world as it is, it's wrong. We were meant to work it and to take care of it. Now, when I was a kid, I was only 9 years old, and my dad was a construction worker. We lived in South Texas. It was super hot, humid. And at 9 years old, he would take me off during my summers to go work with him. And I absolutely hated it. As a matter of fact, I remember as a kid sobbing like a little girl in the van. He didn't care, just took me and did it. But today, I love what I do. And when I'm not doing other things that I love doing right now, like usually hanging with my family or surfing, riding dirt bikes, mountain bikes, if I'm not doing those things I love, then I just want to be working because I love what I do. And I learned the virtue of work. Now, it's taught to me the hard way, unfortunately, but today I love it. Now, a practical tip that we take out of this is that we should embrace our professions. We should embrace the skills that we've been given, the calling that we've been given, And we should use that to bring value to other people. And we should seek job satisfaction. We should be doing things that we like, things that can provide value to other people. Think about how your work improves the world. Think of it as a form of helping others and instead of a selfish endeavor that you do for yourself. All right, now moving on, we've talked about work. Now, hopefully you're working and you're building wealth. And a lot of times people think that wealth is evil, that rich people are greedy or evil. And a lot of people think that having wealth might be bad. However, wealth is actually a gift from God. It was a divine gift. So really, if you understand this, those skills that I have and really the ability to even generate wealth is a gift from God, right? It's meant to confirm his covenant and it's meant to be a blessing for us. Now, in the Bible in Deuteronomy 8:18, it says, "But remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the ability to produce wealth and so confirms his covenant, which he swore to your ancestors as it is today." Now, when I first started working, when I started my first business, and I started at this point making a lot of money at this point in my time, I also spent a lot of money. I went and bought the big truck. I bought the big fast boat. You know, I didn't think about using wealth as I was like creating it, right? I didn't think about using it wisely because I was kind of creating it so fast. I didn't understand the gift that I'd been given. But then, unfortunately, I lost it. And after losing it all and having to start over, I realized what I had done. And then I started to look at the skills that I had learned, the mental capacity that I had built up, the skills as a gift. And I thought, these were given to me for a purpose. They're not to be squandered, but they're to be shared. And as soon as I started to reframe the way I looked at it, my wealth started exploding again. So some ways that you can apply this in your own life, if you want to have success and wealth, is to recognize that your abilities, your skills, your mental capacity is actually given to you as a gift. And we should be responsible to steward that, to take care of it, to cultivate it, to build on that. We want to be able to use our resources wisely and responsibly. And again, not selfishly for ourselves, but also to serve and to help other people. So we're making money, we're working hard, we realize our skills are a gift. And now with those skills, we want to strive for excellence. This is number three. Now, when I'm coaching other entrepreneurs, usually the first thing that we look at is how much they're charging their customers. Now, typically what I find is almost everybody gets this wrong. They're charging their customers. And what they do is they go, well, my competition is at this price. So I guess I'll be at the same price or I'll be a little bit cheaper than they are. But the problem with that is that everybody's competing at the bottom. For me, I say, why not be excellent? Why not be a premium brand? Why not be better than others? And so in my life and in my business, I strive for excellence all the time. I want to compete at the top. Why would you compete for average? And so we've been given the gifts, we've been given the skills, and it's up to us to cultivate those to become the best that we can be in every way that we can. And the Bible encourages this. It encourages excellence in work. It suggests that having skills, highly developed skills, can elevate your standing. It can elevate the amount of opportunities that you have, which is why I say chasing wealth is futile. Wealth, money, is a byproduct of having skills and of having relationships. In the Bible, Proverbs 22:29 says, "Do you see someone skilled in their work? They will serve before kings. They will not serve before obscure men." So what that means is if you have skills and they're good skills and you're skilled in what you do and how you apply them, then you're going to be recognized. That's what it says. So a practical tip is to just always seek to improve on your own profession. Take the courses, get the mentors, watch the YouTube videos, listen to the podcast. In my business, I encourage everyone that works for me to continue to watch YouTube video or podcast for their specific role and find new ideas that they can continue to apply. Not just for me, the business owner, but for their own good so they can build those skills. Moving on to number four, family provision. In the Bible, in 1 Timothy 5:8, it says that anyone who does not provide for their relatives and especially for their own household has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. All right, now, when I grew up, I was middle class. My father, again, as I said, he's a construction worker. We weren't rich at all. We were probably squarely middle class. My father was a crazy hard worker, really set a role model for me, I guess, right? He worked really hard to provide for us. And he didn't provide everything we wanted, but he provided everything we needed. I remember even as a kid, he wanted us to go to private school, but we couldn't really necessarily afford that, so he would trade work. He would trade work in order to get us to those private schools, to get us into the better neighborhoods. And of course, that paid dividends into my life. I wasn't born with a silver spoon, but I was given a nice environment to grow up in, which is big. Again, like I said, I wasn't given everything, but I saw the effort and I had my needs taken care of. So providing for one's family is fundamental. It's a fundamental responsibility that really reflects our own faith and our own integrity. So really what we want to do is we need to be prioritizing our wealth. We need to prioritize our work, the way we make money, the way we build that wealth, prioritize our planning, financial planning, so we can make sure that we can take care of our family's needs. That may include setting up savings, obviously getting health insurance, like planning for educational retirement needs and all of these things, making sure that our families and our loved ones have what they need. We need to be taking care of them. All right, moving on to number five, and we'll talk about budgeting and financial discipline. In the Bible, in Proverbs 21:20, it says, "Precious treasure and oil are in a wise man's dwelling, but a foolish man devours it." You see, a wise man stores up those things that he needs, but a foolish man doesn't. A foolish man doesn't think about it, that they just consume. We're not meant to be consumers. We're meant to be creators. We're creating, we're saving, we're pushing value into the world. I wish I could tell you that my path to being an entrepreneur was smooth. I wish I could tell you it was easy, but it's not. It hasn't been. And as a matter of fact, throughout my career, I've ran businesses now through four major market crashes, four different recessions. I've had business investments that crushed it. I've won one really big, made a lot of money. I've also lost big. I've told you guys a lot of my stories on those as well. And I've been able to make money really quick. And I've also been very surprised how quickly it can shut off at some point. Now, over the years of tough lessons, I've learned to build financial discipline. Now, it didn't come easy. I'd have a couple tough lessons. Like I said, smooth seas never made a skilled sailor. And so I've had to learn the hard way, unfortunately, to build that financial discipline. And this, for me, includes owning assets, having strong cash flow. For me, because of my ups and downs, it means keeping a huge cushion of cash savings for me. More than some financial advisors think I should, but it just feels good for me. So really what we want to understand here is that wise management of resources through budgeting, through savings, through planning is actually sort of the hallmark of having wisdom. Understanding that there is seasons, you have to be prepared for that. A practical tip of how you can apply that is to really think about what is that you need? How could I live on less than I produce? And then develop and stick to that budget, stick to that plan. Now, I'm not believing that we should save our way to wealth, but we do want to manage the resources that we have appropriately. We want to cut unnecessary expenses, maybe change your credit card every once in a while to get rid of all those automatic charges on there. Prioritize saving so you have some cushion there. And of course, prioritize investing to build a financial cushion and of course, secure your wealth into the future. Now, number six is a controversial topic that you hear other maybe Christian people talking about. And it's something I very greatly disagree with Dave Ramsey on, but it is important to point out. And that is that we need to be cautious of debt. Now, Dave Ramsey, again, I'm not a big fan of his. He says that you should not have debt. You should pay off all your debt. He tells everyone that, we don't have debt, right? But it fails to take into consideration that we are in a debt-based monetary system. And that means that money is created through debt. And so if we want to build wealth, then we sort of need to learn how to use debt. But here's the key. We have to learn how to use it responsibly. So Dave Ramsey is right for the majority of people because they've never learned how to use it responsibly, but that's not me and you. I think of debt sort of like fire, where fire can warm up my house, but if I'm not responsible with it, it could also burn my house down. So in the Bible, they talk about debt being this form of bondage and they caution us about the risks. In Proverbs 22:27, it says that the rich rule over the poor and that the borrower is slave to the lender. It's good context. Obviously, in our day and age, if you can't pay that debt, we have ways to get out of it. But I still think about it that way. The rich rule over the poor, the golden rule. Who has the gold makes the rules kind of a thing. Now, for me, I've talked about some of my financial struggles. One of them was in 2008, the great financial crash. And I had way too much debt that I couldn't service when the entire global market crashed. I couldn't service the debt and I got caught off sides. It wasn't good for me. But you can also think about other ways that debt could be bad. So, for example, people go to college and get student loans. And now this becomes this form of bondage where now they have to work to pay off that debt. They couldn't take time off, things like that. But the real practical tip here is be careful with the debt. Don't get caught off sides like I did. Be careful of taking long-term debt because you could be a slave to the lender, meaning you have to work to always be able to pay that back. Avoid really like high interest debt, what I would call bad debt. These would be like unnecessary loans, using debt to do consumable things like going on vacation and things like that, pay cash for those things. Good debt would be using debt for making more money. buying rental properties, building a business, things like that. Number seven, the Bible says that we should be actually investing for growth. Now, I talk about investing mostly on this channel, and yes, that is a biblical principle. It tells us that we should do that. Now, in the Bible, they have a parable, a story about talents. And it teaches us the importance of using what we're given to generate more. The master left, and he left talents with each of his servants. When he came back, he asked his servants how much you had. And the one that had made a lot of money back, he got more money to work with, or more talents. The one who made a little bit more, he also got more talents. But one of the servants went and hid the money and said, hey, we didn't want to invest it because we were afraid to lose it. We know that you don't want to lose your money, so here is your money back. And he was called, that servant was called evil and wicked, and he was cast out. And so basically this is teaching us that we need to be investing if we want to get more back. Now, what I found is a big difference between a poor and a wealthy mentality is how they think about things and really the words that they use. You can hear it as they talk. So a poor mentality thinks of everything as an expense. They think of like, I have to spend this money. I'm spending my time doing this, right? I'm spending my money, things like that. But a wealthy mindset thinks about things differently. They think about things as investing, as in I'm investing my time. I'm investing my money. Now, just last week, I signed up for a mastermind program. It cost me $28,000, which is a crazy huge expense, right? Well, no, not for me. I don't look at it as an expense. I look at it as an investment. I expect that inside this program, I'm going to learn some things. I'm going to meet some people, some connections where I'm be able to make a return of maybe 30, 50, even 100 times what I paid. And the time that I spend in that mastermind specifically is to get more time back. So for me, it's not an expense. Both the time and the money I put into it, I expect to get back tenfold. Now, a practical tip of this would be to think of how we can invest wisely in courses, in programs, sort of like the mastermind I've jumped into. Assets, like investing into real estate that can provide cash flow, tax incentives for me, investing into Bitcoin that could grow, other businesses, things like that. Now, of course, always assess risk and always look for these growth opportunities, but you need to be multiplying your assets. Yes, in a debt-based monetary system, we have to, but it's also a biblical principle. All right, moving on to number eight. This is having an active investment strategy. Now, in the Bible, Proverbs 14:15, it says that the simple believe anything, but the prudent give thought to their steps, all right? And so this makes me think about people today that are in this YOLO, you only live once, gamble culture, where they're on Twitter, on YouTube, and they're messaging me on DMs on Instagram saying, what asset should I buy? What's the hot crypto stock to buy or whatever it is? And they don't even think. They're just asking to be given something, and they're going to rush out and buy the NFT or the Dogecoin or whatever it is, and they're going to lose all their money. They're not giving prudent thought to their steps. Now, one of the biggest myths that I see in the world of investing today is people are seeking this holy grail, they call it, or I call it, the holy grail of passive income, okay? But I call this a myth because, first of all, there's no such thing as truly passive. Instead, all income is derived from time, okay? Now, some takes more time, some takes less time. It's sort of a spectrum. And of course, the more time I put into something, the more income I make. So in my business, I put a lot of time in, I make more income. If I wanted to buy U.S. treasuries, I make 4% to 5%, I do very little time. There was still time to buy it and manage it, things like that. And then there's everything in between. But we need to, as the Bible calls for us, to be actively managing it. That's where our wealth is because, again, we should be developing skills. We should be stewarding those skills. We should be applying those skills. We should be looking at work as a virtue, and those investments should be a process of that. So the practical tip is do your research. Do your research before investing. Understand the industries that you invest into. What are you doing giving your money to a financial advisor that's putting you into a mutual fund that owns some biotech stocks? Do you know anything about that? No, you don't. Do you know anything about that crypto tip that you got on Twitter? No, you don't. You don't know anything about that. So understand a few core industries, invest into those, and then stay informed about your investment's performance. You need to be active. All right, moving on, number nine. Generational wealth. This is something I talk about a lot lately. It's where I'm at this stage of my life right now. I'm thinking about that. And it's actually a biblical principle. In Proverbs 13:22, it says, a good person leaves an inheritance for their children's children, but a sinner's wealth is stored up for the righteous. Doesn't just leave it for their children. A good person leaves it for their children's children. Now, planning for the future is a big deal. It should be a big deal. Like we've already discussed that. right? But the reason why I'm thinking about this a lot right now is because my kids are getting older. And I've been thinking about this generational wealth. We've been, as a matter of fact, just last night, I was working on our family trusts. You know, our trust is how we hold our assets, and those trust vehicles make it easy for us to pass those assets down to our kids without having to go through probate and all those taxes and things like that. We're also adding other types of things on top of them, like whole life vehicles, whole life insurance vehicles that can put money back into the trust. We also built like this constitution. So it's basically a set of rules that our trust will follow as it goes down through the generations. But one idea that I see gaining traction today is one that really bothers me. And it's the idea of not leaving anything for your kids. They like to say that it's because, you know, you're going to ruin your kids if you don't leave them anything. Well, I'm here to tell you that that is a Marxist idea, as in Karl Marx, right? It's a Marxist idea that's crept into the mainstream. It's not a biblical idea, right? I hate to break it to you. It's not the money that's going to ruin your kids. It's your failure to raise and teach your kids properly. But what happens to the second, the third, the fourth generations? What happens to them if they're not equipped properly? Well, that's a problem, which is why I'm working on a family constitution. It's where we spell out in detail what the Moss family stands for, what it stands against, the types of thinking, the type of values we represent, the types of ideas that are eligible to tap into the family trust. Now, like I said, this is a biblical principle. The Bible supports the idea of building wealth that extends beyond one's lifetime to benefit future generations. So, practical tip, focus on long-term wealth creation. Focus on assets that will stand the test of time. These are what I call trophy assets. These could be businesses. These could be trophy assets, key pieces of real estate, beachfront, lakefront, things like that. Bitcoin, of course, is an asset that's basically immortal. Use legal structures, life insurance policies, whole life policies, trusts, and engage in these estate planning things to secure your family's future. It's a biblical principle. You should be doing it. All right, we're almost done here. Number 10, an inheritance. We've talked about planning for your family's future, but now an inheritance of tangible assets. Proverbs 19:14 says that house and wealth, two tangible things, house and wealth are inherited from fathers, but a prudent wife is from the Lord. That's another tip. Have a good wife. Good luck choosing one. Luckily, I got lucky with that. Now, like I said, this kind of builds on the previous point of planning for our future generations, but let's make this a little bit more tactical and practical. What types of assets should we be passing down? Well, the Bible says real assets. And these are assets that could last for generations. So I believe that our debt-based monetary system has messed up the world in many number of ways, one of which is that it's trained us to steal value from the future, right? Every time we load debt, we're stealing value from the future because we have to pay that later, right? And that's messed things up. I believe that we should be building our lives and the things that I build along the way, the houses, the property, the assets, the businesses, that is proof of my work that I've done on this world. And those assets sort of are maybe the scorecard. Now, we've talked about what to do with the money and how we help other people, but those assets should be things that I can pass down into future generations. And again, as I already kind of mentioned, I think of them as things that are like trophy assets, trophy properties that are scarce that I can pass down. Bitcoin's a perfect example of this again. Now, true biblical inheritance involves passing these assets down to empower the next generation. So what the Marxist idea is to leave nothing because it ruins them, but the Bible tells us to empower them by passing it down. Really, for a practical tip is we want to aim to acquire and maintain these tangible assets like property, right? The goal is to earn fiat currency and convert that, we'll live on less than we've earned, and then convert that into assets, into property, and not to sell the property. When people ask me, what price are you going to sell your Bitcoin, Mark? I'm like, you don't understand what we're doing. The goal is not to sell assets for fiat. We turn assets or fiat into assets and we pass those down to our children. All right, moving on. Number 11. This is a big one for me. Generosity should be the goal. Now, this is a real personal story. I can remember this story pretty vividly. It was many years ago. It was like when I was recovering from the 2008 crash. At the time, I was, you know, kind of struggling to get kind of going again, struggling to provide. At the time, I had a really young family. And I remember at the time, my truck, I was driving a truck and I've always driven trucks. And my truck needed really needed new tires pretty bad, like really bad. And I couldn't really afford them. And at the same time, I was kind of doing like these different little odd jobs and making a little bits of money here and there. And I came into a little bit of money. And I knew that I needed to be giving 10% of that money to my church at the time, which was about $900. But the problem was is that I really needed new tires. Like, they were dangerous, like the metal showing. But I did the right thing. I went ahead. I gave the $900 to the church. And it was literally just a couple of days later, my buddy called me up and he's like, hey, I got a deal. I got this set of tires. I don't need them. Do you want them? And you can have them for free. Now, these tires were valued at about the same amount of money that I had just given away. Now, as you might imagine, I do more of what works. And so I've never stopped giving. I've continued to grow my success. My prosperity has grown every year since. And so really, we can say that generosity is seen as the ultimate purpose of wealth, not to store it for ourselves, but to give it to improve other people. You hear me say it all the time. The reason why I focus on wealth is two reasons. One, to give my family more options, and two, to help more people. So when people ask us, how much is enough? How much is enough what? Enough people I can help? Now, in the Bible, in Malachi 3:10, there's actually a challenge given here. And it says, bring the whole tithe into the storehouse that there may be food in my house. Test me in this, says the Lord, and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing, there will not be room enough to store it. So this is the, I think, the only place in the Bible actually says to test him. So regularly give. Rick Warren says that the best way to break the grip of materialism is to give. Have your kids give, right? Break that grip of materialism. Give to charity, support community projects, help those in need. View generosity as a loss, or not as a loss, but again, as an investment into the well-being of others. And as God said, test them. It'll be given back to us. All right, finally, number 12. We're talking about economics and personal responsibility. Now, back in 2006, I'd been pretty focused just on making money. At this time, I had multiple business successes. I had two different big businesses that I had exits from. I had tens of millions of dollars in real estate, but I didn't know anything about the economy. I didn't know anything about macroeconomics, the Fed, inflation. I wasn't paying attention to any of that. At that point, I had just kind of started getting interested in these topics. I was reading this book. I'm not even sure where I got it from, but I got this book from Harry Dent Jr. titled The Great Bubble Boom Ahead. And for the first time, I could see what was about to come in 2008. Now, after reading that, I quickly started making moves to start divesting from whatever I could. But unfortunately for me, I couldn't move fast enough. And, you know, again, as I've already sort of mentioned, I've told my story before, I got caught up in this whole 2008 great financial crash. It was devastating for me. And it was because I had focused on business, but I didn't understand anything about the economy or anything about macroeconomics. Now, I vowed to never let that happen again. And so that's why today I study business and I study macro. You see, I were responsible, right? We have to understand the seasons. We have to be prepared to make as much as we can in the good times, save, we talked about that, so we can be prepared to weather the storms and the times of drought that inevitably come. Now, in the Bible, there's a story of Joseph. And Joseph goes to Egypt, and he helps Egypt get through this major famine. And basically, it illustrates the consequences of relying too heavily on government provision, which can lead to a loss of personal freedom and property every time. In Genesis 47:13, it says, Joseph's management of Egypt's resources during the famine saved the country, and not just the country of Egypt, but his family that came to Egypt to get help. So what we want to do here is we want to take personal responsibility. It always starts with that. No one's coming to save you. Take personal responsibility for your own economic decisions. You got to be prepared for future uncertainties because they're going to come. And you do that by saving, and again, not relying solely on any external aids like government support. All right, so that's the 12 timeless principles, thousands of years old, that have many methods of applying them, but those are the timeless principles. Now, I hope this video spoke to you. I hope you understand that money is a tool, right? We need to build, we need to plan, we need to build wealth, we need to pass it down to our future generations, and most importantly, the world needs you to be wealthy. The world needs you to be wealthy and successful because we need to, you and I, we need to be leading the world by example, all right? If we fail to do that, if we fail to take personal responsibility, we're going to become dependent on the tyrants who are always going to be happy to tell us what to do. Our rights and responsibilities, they go hand in hand. You can't have one without the other. So if you got any value from this video, if you're motivated to build the world that you want rather than letting others build it for you, I run a community. I run a community called the Market Disruptors Advisors. There's hundreds of people in there learning how to multiply and protect their wealth through investing in business. We've got tons of training materials. coaching. You get access to my team advisors so you can grow your wealth fast. And if you'd like, I'm inviting you to give it a try, right? There's going to be a link in the description down below. It's called Market Disruptors Advisors Community, and I hope to see you in there. But if you want to know more about specific assets to invest into, then you might want to watch this video about the investing black hole right here. And last thing I'll say is that this video is different than anything I've ever done before. So give me your feedback. Ask some questions in the comments down below. Thumbs up if you like it. Thumbs down if you don't. That's okay. Either way, subscribe if you're not already subscribed. And that's what I got. All right. To your success. I'm out.